Investment Committee for March 9th is called to order. This remote hearing is being taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 is being live streamed by House Public Information Office. Mr. Lucheski, please take the roll.
Members, you may unmute yourself when your name is called. Representative Fu Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Fu Lee, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje.
Present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Frankie.
Frankie, present.
Representative Keith Frankie, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Here.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen. Representative John Hewitt.
Here.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Representative Leon Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Leon Lilly, present. Representative Eric Lucero.
Present.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh,
Donald Raleigh, present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West. Representative Jay Zhang.
Present.
Representative Jay Zhang, present. Representative Rick Hansen. Representative Nolan West. Members, with the conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Lucheski. A quorum is present. Resident Murphy, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 4th?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes for March 4th as printed.
Representative Murphy moves approval of the minutes for March 4th. Any discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 4th are approved. Members, today we will hear several bonding bills on an informational basis only. Each bill author has one testifier and have been allotted 7 minutes. Some of these environmental related proposals have been before the House Capital Investment Committee in one form or another. And in the past, and at least one of them has been toured. Other proposals are in areas that are under or unfunded, so we will hear about those needs and the emerging needs that we have across the state. So to start out with, we have House File 960. Chair Nelson, welcome to the committee, and please begin.
I mute myself here. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 960 is a bonding bill for Hennepin County. It's about getting money to expand their transfer station that's up here in Brooklyn Park in the northwest corner of my district. It is what they're trying to do is expand it for the expanding needs of handling organic recycling materials. The current station is not large enough to do that. Right now they're kind of doing it up there on an ad hoc basis. There are issues with that need to be fixed there with the water that comes off the organics and that. And with that, I have Mr. I think is Brent Furness. I have somebody from the county here to explain the bill in more detail. And the members in your packet, there was a sheet, handout sheet that kind of explains it also.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I have on the list Mr. McNary, the assistant director at Hennepin County.
Yep, that's who it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Nelson. In Minnesota, counties are responsible for managing waste in an environmentally sound manner. And managing organics is one of the things we are trying to do to reduce the impact of waste, especially the creation of methane from organics disposed of in landfills. State leadership is needed to get us from how we manage waste today to zero waste and better recycling and waste reduction tomorrow. This bonding request is an example of state leadership by helping us expand our organic transfer operations to collect 50% more compostable material. Expanding our operations at the Brooklyn Park Transfer Station will help Hennepin County rely less on landfilling and waste to energy in managing waste. Action on organics recycling is needed to meet our waste management and climate goals. Food waste is the most common material in the trash. Organics recycling is our best opportunity to reduce landfilling. Organics are a problem in landfills. Composting and methane digestion are effective climate change mitigation strategies. The county action on organics recycling aligns with state initiative and goals. Meeting the state's 75% recycling rate goal will require significant progress on organics. Governor Walz has supported capital assistance grant programs through the MPCA to build or expand facilities that support composting. Climate experts rank reducing methane from landfills as a top climate solution because of its potential to rapidly slash emissions of methane. This project would reduce carbon emissions by 12,568 metric tons CO2 equivalent by diverting more organics from the trash. Infrastructure development needs to keep pace with organic collection programs. Hennepin County is a leader in organics recycling. The county has supported organic expansion for cities, schools, and businesses. In 2019, we revised our recycling ordinance to lay the foundation for recycling more organics. The organics tonnage is expected to double over the next few years. Additional capacity is needed to collect, transfer, and process organics. The Brooklyn Park Transfer Station is an important part of the organics recycling system. It is in close proximity to where organics are generated and collected. In 2019, 40% of the organics sent to local compost sites was transferred through the Brooklyn Park Transfer Station. Good infrastructure reduces the cost of organic collection for businesses and residents. Haulers and cities expect county leadership on developing infrastructure. The organics area at the Brooklyn Park Transfer Station is at full capacity. When that facility was designed and constructed, it was designed to handle trash, not source separated organics. The organics are currently managed in a temporary bunker system, which is at full capacity, and there's currently not space for additional organics expansion. The existing layout causes operational issues. Improvements are needed to reduce contamination, which is the most important issue for compost sites and market development. We hope to break ground later this year and be operational in late 2022 or early 2023. And with that, I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McNary. Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
I'm David McNary, the Assistant Director for Hennepin County Environment and Energy Department.
Thank you, Mr. McNary. Chair Nelson, seeing no members' questions, do you have any closing comments?
I'll just thank you for hearing the bill, and I hope we get your approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, for the presentation today. Next up on the agenda is Representative New Brindley's House File 940. Welcome to the committee, Representative New Brindley's. Please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the consideration of the bill. This bonding request is for the Chisago County Household Hazardous Waste Facility. I appreciate the request. It's a relatively modest request for bonding, $390,000. but Chisago County is one of the counties with the lowest commercial industrial base in the entire state. And so even these small projects are a real strain on our county. So I appreciate the consideration. And I've got Ms. Lisa Thibodeau here from the county to talk more about the project.
Ms. Thibodeau, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Lisa Thibodeau, and I'm the Solid Waste Administrator for Chisago County. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative New Brindley for our opportunity to speak with you today. Chisago County is looking for your support of House File 940, which is our bonding request for a capital assistance or CAP grant through the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for a 50% match or $390,000. That will help us fund a badly needed renovation of our 20-year-old Chisago County Household Hazardous Waste Facility in North Branch. And North Branch is about an hour north of the city. We need your help for necessary renovations and expansions so that our public facility can continue to serve the people of East Central Minnesota for the next 20 years. So in case you're not familiar with HHWs, our county-run facilities partner with the state, and they're located all around the state, but we partner with the state to collect and properly manage household hazardous waste. And every homeowner and business has leftover paint or chemicals somewhere in their garage or under their sink, and I bet everybody here has a stash somewhere too. Our household hazardous waste facility helps keep these toxic chemicals out of the trash and thus protects landfills and the environment from contamination and costly problems down the road. The landfill we work with is the East Central Solid Waste Commission up in Mora, which is Kanabec County. The commission is a five-county publicly owned and operated landfill for Pine, Kanabec, Mille Lacs, Isanti, and Chisago. The commission also supports our request and passed a resolution of support for our CAP grant request in 2020. Our household hazardous facility was built in 1999 originally with the help of CAP funding. So for over 20 years, we've been assisting the residents and businesses of Chisago County the region. Both Isanti County and Washington County directly benefit from our facility through shared service and reciprocity agreements. And the other East Central counties of Pine, Kanabec, and Mille Lacs benefit on an individual referral basis. Our facility helps folks safely dispose of their chemicals, and we serve over 2,500 households in the region on an annual basis. Our central location has easy access from I-35 and Highway 95 in the city of North Branch. And in fact, we have had record participation at our facility every year since we were built. It's gone up about 5% every year. And I just did the reports for 2020, and we were up 4% in participation during the pandemic last year in 2020. So use of our facility has more than doubled since we were open due to such things as area population growth and the success of programs such as the Paint Care Product Stewardship legislation, which the legislature passed a few years ago, which is working great to cost effectively bring in more paint and chemicals. So believe it or not, we are a small facility, but we process over 100 tons of HHW annually. So that's a lot of toxic stuff we're keeping out of the trash. On a busy Monday during the summer, the cars are lining up down the block waiting to pull in. But our facility is showing its age as we are going on our 22nd year. And community use and processing demands placed on our operation have resulted in us outgrowing our existing 1,000 square foot facility. 1,000 square foot warehouse is not that big. And we have run out of space, and our warehouse now fills up after just one or two collection days where we used to be able to go a couple of months. So we would like this grant to enclose our open overhangs to create more interior warehouse space. We would like to update our mechanicals, such as our exhaust fans, in order to protect our workers. We would like to add a garage cold storage building out back for our overflow and supplies. We would also like to add a gravel recycling yard with a drive-through open to the public for our badly needed residential recycling drop-off, which would help us get to the mandated 35% state outstate recycling goal that many counties like us strive to meet. And I think importantly, especially these days, residents and businesses using our facility have a positive experience with government when we help solve their chemical disposal problems. Residential drop-off is no charge, and businesses pay a minimal pass-through fee. So we experience every day that people will do the right thing when you give them an option and you don't make it too hard. So to wrap up, supporting our household hazardous waste facilities cap grant request is, in our opinion, a good investment for the state's 50% contribution and Chisago County's 50% match. So together we can get this $800,000 project done, and we can continue to effectively serve the people of Chisago County and the region. So I want to thank you, and we look forward to your support and any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Thibodeau. Representative New Brenly, seeing no members' questions, do you have any closing comments?
I just thanks for the consideration, members.
Thank you. Next up on the agenda is Representative Wolgamott, House File 1533. Please begin with your presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back in the Capital Investment Committee. I miss you guys and wish I was there with you. There's always next biennium, but thank you. It's an honor to be back. I'm here to present House File 1533, which will create a model Greater Minnesota Unified Waste Division Recycling and Compositing System to meet the growing needs of the eight regional counties of the counties of Douglas, Pope, Otter Tail, Grant, Stevens, Stearns, Benton, and Sherburne. The project is located in Alexandria. The total cost of the project will be $8.9 million. But, Mr. Chair, I want to note that the requested bonding amount is $4 million, and the local contribution will be $4.9 million. The project will retrofit and expand the existing waste diversion recycling processing facility, including problem material management and emerging waste recycling programs. Mr. Chair, members, this is a shovel-ready project designed to replace aging and undersized public infrastructure with flexibility built in to meet the needs of the communities in these eight counties for the next 30 plus years. That's my bill, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'd like to turn over to my testifier, Mr. Steve Virtuta. Thank you.
Mr. Virtuta, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Steve Virtuta, Director of Pope Douglas Solid Waste Management. Thank you for the opportunity to hear about our project this morning. I'd like to describe a little more detail of our recycling and composting project located in Greater Minnesota in Alexandria, Minnesota. I do have a slideshow that I'm going to try to share my screen here, and hopefully this will work while I'm talking. There we go. We up?
You're up. Please proceed.
All right. So our board manages a resource recovery facility that processes over 80,000 tons of municipal solid waste or trash from counties operating in this area, and we've been operating since 1987. The facility has served its representatives well, but after 33 years, the facility is in need of some major repairs and upgrades. We are in the middle of starting a $19 million infrastructure project that will secure the success of the future of solid waste in our region for the next 30 years. During the bonding session of 2020, our project was split into two phases. Initially, thank you for phase one. It was awesome. We secured $5 million to get this project going. It includes household hazardous waste, which was described very well by Lisa, a recycled drop-off area, an education center, an area to receive problem materials, and in addition, a regional compost facility that will serve the counties in the region. We are finalizing permitting for this project currently, and we are starting construction on phase one this fall. I'm here to talk a little more in detail about phase two of this project. The funding and implementation of phase two is critical for the overall success of our project. We are currently seeking $4 million of an overall $8.9 million project that will expand our tipping floor and fund the installation of advanced material recovery equipment in our facility. The project will greatly enhance our ability to pull recyclable material out of the trash, and it will make our facility safer. The equipment will increase our recycle rate to almost 8%. That's 8% in addition to what's already pulled out in curbside recycling. This is material that is getting pulled directly out of the garbage and is being recovered instead of being sent to a landfill or being combusted. The details of the facility are included in a fact sheet presented, so I won't go into the specific details of exactly what we're doing. What I've got up on the map on the screen right now is just a brief description of phase one over on the right-hand side of your screen. Basically, that's our new multi-purpose facility that will cover all of those items that I just discussed. And for phase two, what we're doing is we're adding on to our tipping floor and our equipment building, which is existing MRF. And so just to follow up, the counties are given a responsibility to make sure we're doing what's right for solid waste currently and also what we're going to do in the future. The counties of Pope and Douglas are in full support of this project and have signed a resolution to provide matching dollars if the state approves our request. Just as an additional benefit, the overall project will remove over 14,000 metric tons of greenhouse gases from the environment, both through all of the processes, the material recovery, the organics recovery, and as well as not needing to send any these materials to the landfill. That's equivalent to removing about 3,000 vehicles off the road. So it's a significant impact to greenhouse gas emissions. That's all I have for today. Thank you for your consideration on this project.
Mr. Rakota, I just have a quick question for you. Was this one of the projects that we toured back in 2019? Did we come by?
It is, correct. Yep, you were up in Fergus Falls, and yeah, we were able to show you our project.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no members' questions, Representative Wogema, any closing comments?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for your consideration. And again, on behalf of Douglas, Pope, Ottertail, Grant, Stevens, Stearns-Benton, and Sherburne counties, I ask for your support for this very important project. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wogema. Next up is Representative Acorn's bill, House File 750. Welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members of the Capital Investment Committee. I'll be presenting the next two items on the agenda, both of which are intended to be programs that communities throughout our state can benefit from, rather than focusing on just one community or one facility. First up is House File 750, which is a bill that is requesting $16 million in bonding for urban forestry. Investing in our urban forests has never been more critical than it is now. We have a history in our state of bonding for urban shade tree projects. In fact, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources currently has an active grant program for local units of government across Minnesota to replace local trees on their public lands. This bill will be a much needed boost to that existing program. Minnesota has nearly 1 billion ash trees in our state, with many in our cities and towns where they make up as much as 60% of all urban trees. These trees are now under threat by the emerald ash borer, which will ultimately kill any not protected by expensive insecticides. Currently, the best management plan is to remove and replace ash trees with appropriate species. Protecting our trees from exotic species is not the only benefit of investing in our urban forests. Trees help mitigate climate change by naturally sequestering carbon and reducing the urban heat island through shading. They also provide environmental benefits such as reducing stormwater runoff, mitigating air pollution, and providing urban wildlife habitat. I am joined today by Karen Zumach, Director of Community Forestry with Tree Trust.
Ms. Zumach, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and community members. My name is Karen Zumach. I'm the Director of Community Forestry for Tree Trust, which is a Twin Cities-based nonprofit, and the current president of the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee, which is a committee composed of public and private sector tree care professionals, interested citizens, and nonprofit organizations from across the state, with board members representing the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota Forestry Association, Society of American Foresters, among others. We are tasked with educating and informing all Minnesotans about the benefits of a healthy and resilient community forest. We serve as the state's Urban Forest Council. We come here in strong support of Representative Akam's bill, House File 750. Let's start with a definition. As Representative Akam said, we're talking about trees in our urban and community forests. So these are trees that line our streets and shade our homes. They're trees that are planted to improve the places where we live. If we think about a tree-lined street, we think about a park, we think about a tree and maybe your yard. Those are the trees we're talking about in our urban and community forest. And many of those trees will die over the next decade. It's been 12 years since the invasive pest, the emerald ash borer, was confirmed in our state and has now spread to 26 counties across Minnesota. It has also been found north of Minnesota in Winnipeg, and right now we're nearly surrounded. The DNR estimates that there are nearly 3 million trees growing in our urban and community forests, and we will lose every single one of them without active management within the next 10 to 20 years. Many of you may remember the devastation caused by Dutch elm disease in the 70s and 80s, and emerald ash borer is Dutch elm disease on steroids. EAB is a big deal. It's considered the most destructive forest pest ever in North America, leaving a path of hundreds of millions of dead trees in its wake since first arriving outside of Detroit in 2002. Minnesota is home to the most ash trees anywhere in the country. The Minnesota DNR estimates that there are nearly 1 billion ash trees with a B across the state. That being said, we have the most to lose in regards to emerald ash borer. In our northern forest, the black ash component, which exists in our state, is unlike anywhere else in the nation, making up a large percentage of that 1 billion trees. This forested land is an ecological and environmental treasure that must be protected. And that protection is most impactful in our communities where active management and where EAB is the best defense to keep it on track and keep it out of where it isn't. The threat EAB poses to our quality of life, the environment, and the economy is far-reaching, leaving few issues of concern across the state untouched. EAB is indeed what we like to call a predictable disaster, and significant funding is needed to assist communities in managing this devastation. If you think about a constituent's yard as a community in Minnesota and they had 5 mature 50 to 60 foot tall trees in their yard, they would expect to lose at least one to as many as 3 trees due to EAB. In a city of 20,000 trees, that looks more like 4,000 or 12,000 trees. Imagine losing that many trees in the span of just a few years. And that's what EAB is doing across the state to our community forests. This devastation comes in the form of canopy loss, but it also comes in the form of straining municipal budgets. In 2019, it marked a turning point for our efforts, and this funding provided by this body and supported in the Senate was the first step in helping communities manage EAB. It was a start. These efforts must continue in order for our communities to manage EAB where it is and keep it out of where it isn't. It should be noted that the first appropriation for Dutch elm disease in 1975 was $1 million. In the 77 and 78 biennium, $28.5 million was appropriated to help communities manage their trees. So let's think for a moment as Representative Akam talked about those environmental benefits. So that single ash tree standing along a street in front of a constituent's home, for example, and that tree is 40 feet tall. It's the diameter of about 18 inches. And that single tree is providing stormwater benefits, stormwater mitigating benefits, conserving energy with its shade, sequestering and avoiding carbon, helping us to reach those critical climate change goals, reducing the urban heat island and increasing those property values. It's doing all of that just standing there. It's one of the few pieces of infrastructure and arguably the only bonding investment this committee could make that actually increases in value over time. In short, investing in trees provides big benefits. Just to listen to a few issues that the communities are facing in St. Paul, which is the epicenter of EAB, with 100% of their untreated ash now presumed to be infested in St. Paul, the city has had to make the difficult decision to prioritize removal of infested trees over stump grinding and replanting. If funding levels remain static as they have for the most part of the last decade, stump grinding and replanting could lag behind removals for up to 10 years. Imagine your street losing all of its trees and then not seeing new ones planted for 10 years. With over 11,000 ash trees remaining on city streets, the impact of these removals without adequate funds to replant will be a blight on the city and its residents. Even in Winona, where EAB infestations have given the city foresters lots to do, with lots of time-sensitive work to do to bring down these dead and dying trees before they fall, it's limited their amount of time, the budget, and budget the tree crew can use to spend on planting. MNSAC has seen this before. Minnesota has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in today's money to battle Dutch elm disease in the 70s and 80s. And this is precisely the type of investment we need today. And one thing is clear, time is running out and communities are struggling to keep up with management. House File 750 is the aggressive infusion of funding communities across the state need. We need to manage this pest where it is so we can allow the time for important research to continue. Research has come so far since 2002 when EAB was just found, and we can do better. We have to do better. We have too much to lose here in Minnesota, and I appreciate your time. Thank you, and I welcome any questions you might have.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I just have a question about how completely the $16 million that's requested addresses the actual need. Is it 1%, 10%, 100% of what you would be able to spend if you were going to fully address the need? Thank you.
Ms. Zumach?
Representative Ryer, I am actually not the person to answer that. I suspect there are people at the DNR that may have some idea of that, but since 2015, we've been estimating that we would need at least $13 million a year for the next 20 years for communities to manage EAB.
Representative Acom, if you could just follow up on that and get that information to the committee, that would be great, please.
Will do. Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Acom, any closing comments on this bill?
I just thank the committee for the opportunity to present this morning, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Coleman. Thank you, Mrs. Zumach. Next up on the agenda is House File 1323. Representative Coleman, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members. The next bill I will be presenting this morning is House File 1323, which is a bill requesting bonding to implement a revolving loan fund to install solar on existing state facilities. Implementing solar on state facilities would be a win-win scenario. First, transitioning to solar energy will save the state money by producing our own power. Second, by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, it will decrease the negative impacts of climate change. Currently, Executive Order 19-27 directs the 24 cabinet-level state agencies, including Met Council, to reduce the consumption of energy per square foot by 30% by 2027, and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 30% by 2025. State agencies are looking for opportunities to reduce energy consumption and expand the utilization of renewable energy, but unfortunately, they do not have the financial resources to do so. This bill creates a revolving loan fund where energy savings will be used to repay the account, which will then allow for more loans to be made in the future. These investments will not only produce energy conservation, but will be permanent improvements to our facilities lasting for decades. We have 24 state-level agencies that oversee thousands of facilities statewide, so the potential impact of this loan fund would be substantial. With me today is Justin Fay from Fresh Energy, and I'd like to turn it over to him now.
Mr. Fay, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and good morning to members of the committee. My name is Justin Fay, and I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nearly 30-year-old Minnesota-based nonpartisan nonprofit organization, and we work to achieve equitable carbon-neutral economies. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today in support of House File 1323, which appropriates state bonding dollars to establish a revolving loan fund that would support the installation of solar on state buildings. We are truly living through a solar revolution. Over the past decade, solar energy has emerged as a critical tool that offers a number of public benefits: reduced emissions, creation of local Minnesota jobs, and long-term savings on customer utility bills. Minnesota's solar market has exploded, with now more than 1,500 megawatts of solar installed in our state. It has become clear that the private market sees solar as a winning proposition worthy of long-term capital investment. Representative Akam's bill would create a new pathway for state agencies and the Minnesota taxpayers that fund them to more fully participate in and realize the many benefits of solar, including and especially lower utility bills, which translates directly into lowering the cost of government operations. In fact, public buildings are among the very best candidates for solar. They are often on older building stock, often have large flat rooftop space, and don't commonly turn over ownership or tenancy, meaning a payback period is extremely likely to be fully realized on state buildings. Other states around the country have figured this out, and innovative proposals from using solar to reduce public agency utility bills are emerging from plenty of unexpected places. In Michigan, the state's Department of Natural Resources found that 15% of their entire utility bill was being spent just operating their state-owned fisheries. Their solution? A new solar project to power the state's largest fishery, with more expected to follow. In the state of Maryland, the state actually maintains currently an ongoing competitive grant program for solar on public facilities that state agencies are eligible to apply for, an awful lot like what Representative Akam is proposing here. They've had that program operating successfully in Maryland for more than a decade. Of course, Minnesota hasn't been idle in this regard. As Representative Akam noted, Governor Walz's executive order set goals for Minnesota state agencies to reduce both emissions and energy consumption. And individual agencies have been pursuing solar and other renewable options where they can. The Capitol Complex, for example, currently has 4 buildings with solar installed. But there's a lot more that could be done, and this bill would put another tool in the proverbial toolbox. The revolving loan fund concept proposed in House File 1323 is a promising framework for supporting state investments that have the potential to save taxpayer dollars in the long run while leading by example and reducing emissions. To top it off, more than 4,300 Minnesotans are already working in the solar industry, meaning that state bonding investments have the strong potential to support Minnesota jobs at the same time. That's a win-win-win for Minnesota, and fresh energy encourages one more win than Representative Akam mentioned. And fresh energy encourages the inclusion of this language as part of a future bonding package. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Fay, I'm just wondering, do you know what the lifespan is of a solar project?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, most solar manufacturers, to my understanding, warranty their products for 25 years. That doesn't mean that's the lifespan of the product. It just gives you a sense of the relative scale of what the manufacturers are typically willing to warranty up front.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you.
Seeing no further questions, any closing comments, Representative Akam?
My thanks to the committee for the consideration, and I hope to earn your support.
Thank you for the presentation. Next up on the agenda is House File 1174, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have a couple more forestry bills to present. House File 1174 is a bill that will provide one-time funding to 3 DNR forest-related programs: Forest for the Future, reforestation, and tree nursery capacity. This bill is an opportunity for the state to invest in natural infrastructure programs that leverage Minnesota's forest lands to address climate change and clean water. Bonding eligible conservation programs like these can be used to keep sustainable working forests intact and grow our forests to help filter and keep our water clean, sequester carbon, provide recreation opportunities, and support Minnesota's economy. To talk more about the need for and benefits from these programs, I'd like to introduce Chris Dunham from the Nature Conservancy, who can explain the forest programs in the bill.
Ms. Dunham, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members. My name is Chris Dunham. I work for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota as our Resilience Forestry Manager based in Duluth. The Nature Conservancy is an international organization with a mission to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends. We work to achieve our mission locally by protecting lands and waters in Minnesota for the benefit of people and nature. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 1174. Our scientists recently released a report from Minnesota highlighting how natural lands are a significant tool that can play a huge role in sequestering carbon and storing carbon and mitigating the effects of climate change. In addition to important carbon and climate benefits, our natural lands provide many critical ecosystem services like flood control, maintaining water resources, supporting soil health, and maintaining wildlife habitat. The report has been shared with this committee previously and is shared again today in your virtual packet. The report highlights that forests are the number one natural lands tool available to us in Minnesota for sequestering carbon. I just want to repeat that forests are the number one natural lands tool available to us in Minnesota for sequestering carbon. And when it comes to keeping our water clean, forests and other natural landscapes are on the front lines of safeguarding water quality and quantity. We know that investments in protecting water resources today are far less expensive than the cost to restore degraded systems. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. This bill would invest in three important Department of Natural Resources forest programs to continue and accelerate forestry activities that optimize the potential that our forests have to provide carbon and climate mitigation and other ecosystem services. First, the bill includes $5 million for Minnesota Forests for the Future. This program protects private forest lands through conservation easements, helping keep large tracts of forest land intact. By doing so, the state maintains critical natural filters for water and essential carbon storage in both trees and forest soils. In addition to providing important ecosystem services, forests enrolled in the program also help maintain a sustainable wood supply for our forest products industry. As part of the program, landowners develop a sustainable forest management plan that includes timber harvest. The program has been a huge success for many years. There's a wait list for this program across the state. Second, the bill includes $5 million for reforestation. The reforestation needs in the state are significant. Ongoing investment in this program will help the state keep up with replanting after harvest and support reforestation in historically forested areas that are no longer growing trees. Planted areas have critical site preparation needs and maintenance needs for years after planting that ensure seedling survival. Those site preparation and maintenance activities are also supported in this bill. Finally, the bill provides $5 million to expand DNR state tree nursery capacity. DNR is currently permitted to produce 10 million seedlings annually, but recent levels of funding only allow DNR to grow less than half of that 10 million seedling capacity. A recent report highlighting reforestation as Minnesota's top strategy for sequestering additional carbon is not alone. Other states and countries around the world are turning to reforestation as a carbon mitigation strategy. Tree nurseries everywhere will be scaling up to meet this demand. Funding state nurseries to operate at full capacity is essential to expanding tree planting for carbon sequestration. Minnesota has a lot at stake in our forests. We need to retain our prime forest lands, increase tree planting and reforestation, and this bill would make much needed investments in this work. Thank you for the committee's consideration of these important forest programs, and we thank Representative Lippert for his work on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunham. Seeing no members' questions, Representative Lippert, any closing comments?
I thank the committee's time and their consideration on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Next up is House File 519. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 519 focused specifically on the state forest nursery facilities at Dura and has more details about the specific improvements that are necessary there. So with me is Andrew Ahrens of the DNR, who can say more about this legislation.
Mr. Ahrens, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman, Representative Lippert, and members. For the record, my name is Andrew Ahrens, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. This bill's actions and funding level are not included in Governor Walz's bonding bill. Because of that, I'm happy to share details about our need, about our the the Bedora Nursery. The climate change initiatives are expected to drive increasing demand for seedlings, seed, and thus we need additional cooler space and seed production capabilities. The first item is we would like to expand and modernize our seed extractory. Bedora Nursery Seed Extractory currently produces approximately 800 pounds of conifer and hardwood seed each year for reforestation on state, county, and private lands. That seed production is enough to plant 4 to 5 million trees annually. The seed extraction facility is made up of two aging structures. Movement and treatment of seed is inefficient, and we do have safety concerns moving that seed around the large facility. The seed extraction equipment is prone to breakdowns. Replacement parts are becoming difficult to obtain due to the age and the discontinued use of that type of extractor. The facility is very energy inefficient and in need of HVAC upgrades. There are more modern and efficient methods for extracting seed to increase seed production and reduce long-term energy needs and labor costs. We could use heat and humidity rooms. We can boil cones to extract seed, and we want to logically place the production steps near one another to increase efficiency and reduce hazards. We would also look at increasing the cooler storage at Bedora. Currently, during the peak season of lifting and storing seedlings, we have to rent multiple cooler reefer semi-trailers to store seed or the seedlings. Our coolers are of varying age. They are prone to frequent breakdowns. Again, energy inefficient, they're old facilities. Modern systems that would include temperature and humidity controls are necessary to assure healthy stock can be stored prior to delivery to the planting sites on state, county, and private lands. Again, climate change initiatives are expected to drive increasing demand for seedlings, so we need to ramp up production and storage. And lastly, the Bedora Nursery is an aging facility, and we would just be looking for improved HVAC items throughout the facility to improve production. At this point, I'm available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lippert, for bringing these both these bills forward and to the testifiers. I would just like some clarity between the $5 million for nursery facilities in the first bill that was presented and the second bill. What happens if one or the other is approved? Do some nurseries receive funding and some don't? I'm just a little confused. It might have been addressed already, but it went past me. Thank you.
Sir Aarons.
I can respond to that, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Ryer. So all of House File 519 is essentially contained within House File 1174. House File 519 simply has more detailed explanation of what's needed.
Thank you for that, Representative Lipper. Seeing no members' questions, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply say that to plant more trees, we're going to need improved facility capacity and more capacity. And so this bill is a top priority, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Lipper. Next up is Representative Bennett's bill, House File 384. Welcome to the committee, Representative Bennett, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and hello to my fellow committee members. As I was on capital investment my last two terms, but not this year, and I miss you all. So thank you so much for hearing this bill. It's good to be before you all. This is a super important project. I'll give you a little intro, and then I'm going to hand it over to my testifier. But the Shell Rock River Watershed Board was started back in 2003, and they have been doing amazing work cleaning up our waterways and our lakes in my region. And they started upstream doing a lot of projects. They've now worked their way down to our lower lakes, one being Fountain Lake, which is currently being dredged right now to remove phosphorus and other contaminants from the bottom. And those contaminants sit down there, but then they get stirred up when boats and things come over them. So it's really important to get that out to continue this progress. And I can just attest personally, first of all, from all the community members I hear from who are so happy that our lakes are being cleaned up and our rivers and so on, and want this to continue. But also, I just live a couple blocks from the lake and I walk my dog nearby. And, you know, a few years ago, I would never have let my dog go in the lake, much less a person. And now seeing the clarity and the cleanliness of the lake and what these projects have done for it, including the current dredging, it's amazing. And so we really want to see this continue. And this is a very time sensitive project, which is why I'm bringing this forth now. And I would like to turn this over to Andy Henschel, who is the administrator for the Shell Rock River Watershed Board, to continue this discussion.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Mr. Henschel, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bennett. For the record, my name is Andy Henschel, and I am the district administrator for the Shell Rock River Watershed District here in Albert Lea, Minnesota. I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 384. House File 384 would provide $7.5 million in bonding to complete Phase 3 of the Fountain Lake Restoration Project. You have handouts in your package of our request. The biggest thing to note is Fountain Lake is the economic engine of the city. It is our civic center. It is the center of everyday life here in Albert Lea. We were proud to have held the 2019 Governor's Fishing Opener, in which we were able to showcase phase one of our project. The Fountain Lake Restoration Project is a multi-phase dredging project to improve water quality impairments. The district first received bonding dollars in 2014, totaling $7.5 million. Which was matched by $7.5 million in local funds. However, at the completion of phase two of the dredging project, the local match will have been $9.5 million. So there is a huge local investment into this project. The additional funds we are required today are needed for a successful project. Additional funds are needed for one main reason, the completion of phase three of the Fountain Lake Restoration Project. Original estimates of the dredge material to be removed was 1 million cubic yards of material. However, upon completion of the final engineering and modeling for this project, it was determined that 1.7 million cubic yards would need to be removed to achieve the optimal project goal. This is an additional 5 to 600,000 cubic yards of material that we are looking at removing. For a project of this size, final engineering and permitting was not undertaken by the district until the funds came available in 2014. And that is why we are asking for funds to complete the project. Once the final engineering was completed, we split the Fountain Lake Restoration Project into three phases. Phase one began in 2018 and removed roughly 617,000 cubic yards of material in Edgewater Bay, which if you look on your map is the blue section of Fountain Lake. With that, we then after completion in fall of 2019 of phase one, we moved into phase two, which commenced in the spring of 2020 and included Main Bay and Danes Bay, which is in the green on the map. Phase two will conclude this fall with the removal of roughly another additional 600,000 cubic yards, which leaves us where we're at today, and that's third and final phase, which will complete the project and which will include Main Bay, Bancroft Channel, and parts of the Bancroft Bay. If you are familiar with the city of Albert Lea, this phase includes the heart of the downtown business district of the city of Albert Lea. It is critical for the success of this project to complete phase three. If we complete phase two this summer without additional funds, the dredge equipment will have to be removed and demobilized from the lake, and the cost of the total project would then go up due to the delays. Should this happen, we estimate the added cost would be roughly $500,000 just to remobilize back to the lake in 1 or 2 years. This also would increase depending on fuel costs, as we've seen fuel costs climb here in the past few months. This project began as a result of poor water quality on Fountain Lake. It was added to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's list of impaired waters in 2008, and suffers from extensive internal phosphorus load and overabundant algae and low water quality. For decades or more, the Watershed District, along with the City of Albert Lea, have implemented many projects upstream of Fountain Lake to reduce the sediment and pollutants and to prepare the Fountain Lake Restoration Project and to protect our investment. The project is a top priority for the City of Albert Lea, along with support from Freeborn County, the Albert Lea Lakes Foundation, the Albert Lea Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Fountain Lake Sportsman's Club, the Albert Lea Community Education Department, the Albert Lea Freeborn County Chamber of Commerce, the Bayside Ski Team, along with the Albert Lea Anglers. The citizens of Albert Lea have also supported this project and the Watershed District with the implementation of a local option sales tax. This tax has been and continues to be an important tool to assist the funding of the Fountain Lake Restoration Project, as well as providing an important local contribution supported to the state of Minnesota's contributions to this significant project. So again, I would like to thank you for your time and your consideration of this critical project, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Hanschel. Seeing no members' questions, Representative Bennett, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, appreciate the hearing of this bill, and you can see the time sensitivity of it. That dredge actually stays in the water over the winter, so as I'm walking around the lake in the winter, I can see it sitting there. So that's why it's so important to leave it there and let this continue. We can actually save at least $500,000, as Mr. Henschel said, by getting this funding this year and being able to continue without having to pull that dredge out. And I think that's a real good and efficient use of state funds. So thank you again for hearing the bill and just hearing the importance of this beautiful lake we have right in the center of the City of Albert Lea, and appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. It's always good to see you come back to the committee too.
Thanks.
Next up, we have Representative Ryer, House File 1168. Representative Ryer, you're on mute right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Lee and members. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to present House File 1168, a bill that would allow the DNR to acquire land for aquatic management areas and scientific and natural areas. Now, first, a couple definitions. Aquatic management areas, also known as AMAs, are public lands that protect critical waterways while also offering access to anglers. Scientific and natural areas, or SNAs, are public lands that are often home to rare species of plants, animals, or geologic features. They're accessible to birders, hikers, and photographers. This bonding proposal recommends $2 million for each DNR program. There's a lot to like in this bill. AMAs and SNAs provide increased protection of Minnesota's lakes and streams. They're accessible for education and research, and people who like to fish and hikers like me also have them available for recreational use. These are statewide assets. For example, there are AMAs in 72 counties, and they give us a readily available option to preserve our environment for future generations instead of repairing past damage, as a previous testifier said, bringing an ounce of prevention. With that, I'd like to introduce Todd Holman from the Nature Conservancy to tell you more about these programs. Thank you.
Mr. Holman, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members. My name is Todd Holman, and I work for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota, the Mississippi Headwaters Program Director. I'm based out of our Brainerd office, and I'm here today to speak in support of House File 1168. As has been mentioned already this morning, natural lands are a tool to help improve and protect water quality in the state in addition to storing carbon and providing resiliency benefits. The two programs contained in this bill, the Department of Natural Resources Aquatic Management Area Program and the Scientific and Natural Areas Program, both provide unique opportunities to protect sensitive lands that provide multiple benefits for water quality, wildlife, climate resilience, in addition to being open to members of the public for outdoor recreation opportunities. The Aquatic Management Areas, or AMA program, protects land or easements in shoreline areas like lakes, rivers, and streams, and adjacent wetlands, and lands that are critical for fish and other aquatic life, for water quality, for public fishing, and other compatible outdoor recreation. They also provide public access to fishing on lands that perhaps would not otherwise be available. The Scientific and Natural Areas, or SNA program, protects lands with outstanding ecological features vital for maintaining genetic diversity and preventing the loss of important species, communities, and features. As wildlife and plant species migrate northward in the state, these are important resiliency tools that help support continued survival of threatened species and can be part of corridors that facilitate the northerly movement of species in the face of climatic changes. Thank you for the committee's consideration of this proposal, and thank you for Representative Ryer and her work on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Holman. Representative Ryer, no members' questions, so any closing comments?
No, thank you for hearing the bill, and I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you. Next up is Chair Lilly, House File 697.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. This House File 697 provides $4.8 million for the DNR to renovate paved trails. A couple of years ago, the Parks and Trails Council took a look at all the state trails all over the state. They had somebody hop on a bike and filmed it, and it's super fascinating. Our presenter is going to tell you more about that, but What they found is that about 75% of our trails right now are really actually in pretty good shape, but we're in trouble. We're only able to, the DNR right now can only fix about 14 miles a year. And so this bill would bump that up to about double that, about 24 miles a year. So that, because the fear is that by 2030, which isn't that far off in the future, half our trails would be not of poor quality. And so what happens is we're really good as legislators to build trails, but and then we don't do as good of a job of fixing them. But so kind of think of this as of like Keeper, you know, for like we would for the University of Minnesota or Minsky system, but this is for our trails to you know, to take care of what we have. And it's a great investment, super important for Minnesota, but you know, we need to take care of it. So I have with me today Mr. Oftal, and he's from the Parks and Trails Council, and he's going to get into it. He's got a great presentation, and I hope when you leave here today, you take an opportunity to look at their website, because there's some great things to look at. But Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Mr. Oftal, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Can't hear you, sir.
I'm so sorry about that. You can hear me now?
Yes.
We can hear you. Yep.
Please okay. My apologies. Yeah, my name is Andrew Oftedal. I'm here representing the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota. First, I just want to thank Representative Lilly for that great introduction, and to you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify today. I am really grateful to be here and for your time. To start, just a little bit about Parks and Trails Council. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting and enhancing Minnesota's parks and trails. We were founded in 1954, and since that time, we have added more than 11,000 acres to Minnesota's park and trail system. We don't receive any public funding, and we instead rely on the generous contributions of our members. As Representative Lilly said, I'm here today to testify in support of this bill that supports state trail rehabilitation. And as he mentioned, I want to share some research that we conducted that looks at both the current condition and the future needs of Minnesota state trails. Minnesota has about 620 paved miles of state trail, and all of these are owned and operated by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. To do this research, we wanted to rate every mile of trail in the system on its condition. And so to do that, we created what we call the research bike. So I have some slides here that I want to go through quickly. We know that everyone takes in information differently, right? And so we outfitted this bike to collect both visual and objective data. We thought both of those were important. And so the bike has two cameras, and together we took over 100,000 photos with this project. I was fortunate enough to look at every single one. And one of the things we did with these photos was we created virtual tours of every trail in the state. A quick example of that, this is the Central Lakes Trail up near Fergus Falls. And you can see, you can look in any direction you want. You can go up or down the trail. This is Pebble Lake off to the right here. It's a very beautiful section of the trail. These are available for free online on Google Maps. And so far they've had almost 4 million views. And so they've proved to be quite popular. Additionally, then, we used a sensor on an iPhone to objectively kind of record all the vibrations that our rider would feel when riding over a bump or a crack in the trail. To give you a little bit of a sense of how this works, you know, imagine you're on a bike, you're on a trail, and this trail starts out smooth, there's no cracks, and so our data is going to show this very flat line. If you were to continue to ride, however, and say you hit a bump, those cracks are going to appear in the data kind of as a spike. It looks a bit like a seismograph. And then if you were to continue and it's really rough pavement, the data is going to show this really jagged line. So we took all of this data that we collected then, and we used it to rate every mile of state trail as either being an excellent, good, fair, poor, or very poor condition. And so what we found then, and when we brought all this together, and Representative Lilly referenced this already, but the trails generally are in pretty good shape at the moment. We found that about 75% of the system was either in good or excellent condition. But there's definitely some room for improvement here. For starters, we found 32 miles that are in poor or very poor condition, so that are in need of immediate rehabilitation. And perhaps more importantly, our data also shows that we're, and again, and Representative Lilly referenced this as well, but we're currently not doing enough. So we're on average, the DNR is able to rehab about 14 miles of trail every year. This pace continues, about only 60% of the system will be in good condition 5 years from now. And if it was to continue further, less than half the system would be in good shape by 2034. This bill then, if funded, would fund about 24 miles of state trail rehabilitation. And this is the level, the standard that our data shows is needed on an annual basis in order to maintain the existing standards across the state. Again, I think the analogy that Representative Lilly used about comparing this to HEPR is an excellent comparison. And that's exactly what this bill kind of does. Only it does it for the state trail system. Another way to think about it, you know, if you think about our highway system, there's routine maintenance that happens on those, but then you have to repave and redo those highways on a, you know, on a average life cycle as well. So again, I would love to thank Representative Lilly for authoring this important bill, and to you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill today. We do have a link in the handout that was provided in your packets to our full report that has a lot more data that you can look at. All the data is available online. You can explore it for yourself. And I'm happy to, I welcome any questions. So thank you again.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's really cool. That's a really cool presentation, Representative Lilly. I was glad to see just the how they evaluate the quality of the trails. I mean, is there a plan to continue doing that going forward so that you know which areas have the greatest need for renovation?
Representative Lilly.
So I think the gentleman from the Parks and Trails is probably best. What they're doing it on their own. It's not even state team. I'm sure the state is doing assessments, but maybe a testifier can say what they're kind of thinking. You can look at this all over on every trail. Somebody literally rode down every trail, and it's super neat. So maybe our testifier can answer better.
Mr. Oftal.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, this is definitely something that we would love to continue into the future. Some of those plans are still ongoing. This was a very large project for us. We are a relatively small organization. But definitely, this is something that needs to be done every, 3 to 5 years. And it's something that we plan and hope to do in the future to maintain this data set long term.
Chair Farber.
Thank you. Yeah, as the, I guess Representative Lilly suggested the DNR might be able to speak about how they do if they do it in a similar way or not.
So I don't know if we have anybody from the DNR, Chair Lilly, that can answer that. If not, no.
I don't, Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg, I don't believe we do this morning, but we'll happily get you some information and definitely take a look at what the Parks and Trails Council videos are. Super neat.
Yeah, sounds good.
Chair Lilly. Chair Freiberg?
Yep, thank you. I'd appreciate that. I spend, especially this last year, I spent quite a bit of time on a bike on a trail, so I'm just kind of interested in this. So thank you.
Mr. Opdahl, I have a question for you. Of the 32 miles, do you have a map of where that is located so that we have a sense of where that would be?
Yeah. So on the handout that's in your packet, and I can kind of hand it straight up here, but there is a map that shows kind of a 1,000-foot view of the entire system. If you look at the report itself or the interactive data online, you can actually zoom in and see that in more detail. And there's a list in the report for some of the specific trails that are in most need. And so I think I'd direct you to those resources for now.
Thank you. And then last question for Chair Lilly. Will it be possible for us to get on those bikes when we go on our statewide tour?
I believe we could. Mr. Chair, I believe we could have some opportunities. I got up one night and drove around or early and drove around Lake Bemidji. So we could plan that, I think.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Seeing no further questions, any closing comments, Chair Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing us today. It's really good to take care of what we have, and I really hats off to the Parks and Trails Council for taking a look and doing the research. And these trails are super popular now, especially with COVID. The numbers are just spiking of use, and we want to make sure it's safe and good out there. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Next up on the agenda, the final bill is House File 1752. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. House File 1752 is a bonding bill that would appropriate $3 million in bonding to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. This is a part of our Reinvest in Minnesota, or as we know it as the RIM program. What they'll do with this, with the funds is acquire easements in working grasslands from landowners to restore and rehabilitate and enhance working lands. The goal is basically to protect our healthy waterways, soil, water quality, support wildlife habitat, and reduce flood damage, and provide other public benefits. I believe Mr. Holman is here from the Natural Conservancy is here to testify today. If he could testify for me at this point, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Holman, please re-identify yourself and proceed. Mr. Holman, you're on mute right now.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. Again, my name is Todd Holman, and I'm the Mississippi Headwaters Program Director Office out of Brainerd. I'd like to speak on the importance of including House File 1752 in a larger bonding package. And as mentioned before, working lands is operated through the Board of Water and Soil Resources, their historic Reinvest in Minnesota program, or RIM easement program. And this particular iteration of the program works with grassland owners. Think small-scale family ranching operations who have grazing and haying lands or lease their lands for owners that lease their lands for this purpose. And the goal is to keep strategic grasslands intact for the multiple benefits they provide. The Working Grasslands Program is a newer tool available to landowners thanks to the support of the legislature's investment 2 years ago. As a matter of fact, as recently as January of this year, the Board of Water and Soil Resources approved a pilot Working Lands RIM program to execute and deliver these easements to landowners that fit that profile. So far, landowners have been very interested in the program, and we know expanding the availability of this tool will be met with landowner demand. And again, for those of you not familiar with the RIM program through Bowser, it's delivered by the local Soil and Water Conservation District offices. So strong landowner connectivity between the local office and private landowners. While this program, like others highlighted today, can provide a lot of carbon sequestration benefits and resiliency benefits, we know the Working Grasslands program also helps protect drinking water quality across the state, and especially in the Mississippi River Basin, where my work is focused. Across the basin, the historic perennial cover from the forest to the grasslands provides a natural filter for water flowing into the lakes and rivers, which later finds its way into the Mississippi River, which provides drinking water for millions of Minnesotans in St. Cloud and the Twin Cities region. As we see increased development in the state and more land is converted to agriculture, homes, and businesses, it will be critical to have tools that keep strategic grasslands on the landscape to serve as that natural filter, slowing water down, providing water storage during increased precipitation events, and continue to store carbon in the ground. Our priority is not to change the way the land is used, but to help ensure that the lands most important for water quality stay in grassland and working lands. This program is one of many natural infrastructure tools before you today, but it's one that will have a direct impact on drinking water for communities who rely on surface water like the Mississippi River. Thank you for the committee's consideration of this and other natural infrastructure programs today, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for your great work on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holman. Representative Hewitt, seeing no members' questions, any closing comments?
Thank you, members, and I hope this is considered in our overall bonding bill, and I'd like to thank the testifier, Mr. Holman, for showing up today and helping us understand a little bit better. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And so, members, that's the final bill for today's agenda. Our next meeting is Thursday, March 11th at 8:30. We will hear about child care, housing, and safety-related bills on an informational basis. Having no further business before us, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.